Now, let's start by apologizing for starting the meeting a bit late. We're supposed to start at 2. We were waiting for one of our members who are still coming from another meeting. Fortunately, she's just coming now. We'd like to thank you for affording us to have an audience here with us, because you are very important insofar as this department is concerned, the EDT. As a portfolio committee on doing the oversight of the department, we felt that it was good for us to hear from you as the argument, particularly between yourself and SAP Miller. We want to hear about the competition tribunal approved the merger between these two organizations, and there are some conditions that were set for approving the merger. Now we have an interest about those conditions and the challenges that are here there in the agreement. That's what we want to know, and then the update at the end. How far are we going from here? Can I hand it over to you?
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Sorry, I never said who I am. No, this is the second meeting that I'm having in this very same room. I'm Sheikh Kwele, the whip of the committee. Our chairperson is not with us today. She's got a bereavement in the family, so she said we must apologize for her. Then I'll let the other members introduce themselves, and then it will be you as well.
Thanks. I'm Lula Mile, beginning, member of the committee.
Good day, everyone. I'm Catherine Matsimbi, serving in the committee, representing the African National Congress.
Good afternoon. My name is Tanji Mpulo. I'm a member of the committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Peter Poling-Bailey. I'm the committee secretary.
Good afternoon. My name is Mwabi Sambelekan. I'm the researcher for the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Nkundleo Clarence Ibiya. I work for SAP, Corporate Affairs Director.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is John Rogers. I'm responsible for raw material procurement and agricultural development for Africa.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Doreen Kosi. I'm Vice President responsible for Legal and Corporate Affairs in SAP.
Good afternoon. My name is David Hoxwell. I'm the Vice President of Procurement and Sustainability for SAP in Africa.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Oleg Alisa, and I'm the Procurement Director responsible for Entrepreneurship and Sustainability.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Warren Van Rooyen. I'm the Legal Director for Africa.
Good afternoon. My name is Boris Rupert Connick. I'm the Mergers and Acquisitions Director for Africa for ABNZ, responsible for the SAB Thrive Fund.
Afternoon, Honourable Members. My name is Fina Mukwevo, responsible for Public Affairs and Regulatory within ABNZ. Thank you.
No, thanks. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We have a draft agenda on the screen. I don't know if you, because we only gave you these presentations now, and I must really apologize. That's how we thought to shape the discussion, and we appreciate the time that you've given us, and we really wish to thank you. Ricardo, who's our zone president, could not make it because he's traveling, and he sends his apologies as well, so we're here to represent him. So what we thought to do, firstly, is to just do an overview of the commitments, just generally the overview of the project itself, and then we get into the compliance overview, which Warren is going to take, and we do the rest of the commitments. There are sectors into three departments. So we'll take those, and then afterwards we'll do Thrive, which Boris is going to talk us through, and then John will take us through the agriculture, the procurement strategy. But then David, as the vice president in charge of the entire department, Agri, Procurement, Entrepreneurship, will just do a broad overview so that he gives you a sense of what we do in the procurement space in SABA BNBEF. Would that be fine?
Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. So just very briefly, as way of overview from my side, the measure happened in June 2016, as you may be aware. We then sealed the actual deal in October 2017, and in 2016, then we started working immediately from there. Late last year was our first report after we finished the year. So how we do this? This work is managed directly from our global CEO of the company, Mr. Brito. He sits in New York in our head office, because that's the level of priority we have placed onto these commitments. So he takes full accountability for the entire project, but then locally he's assisted by Ricardo Tadeo, who's our zone president. So we call the region zone. So the Africa zone, which is the Africa region, is managed by Ricardo Tadeo, the one who couldn't join us today. Then he takes accountability for the entire project at the local level. And I come in as a legal and corporate affairs vice president. I take responsibility for the work and the coordination thereof. Then we have a couple of committees that actually help us process this work as well. So the public interest commitment in the implementation board, the way it's structured, I know you may be aware of this, but I'll just say it anyway. We have government representatives. The government representatives is constituted by Len, who's sitting across there, whom you know very well. So Len is one of the actual members of the PIC implementation board. Then we have somebody from DTI, and then we have a representative from agriculture and forestry. Then we have ourselves, so three members from our side. We have myself, we have the director of corporate affairs, we then have Boris, who's in charge of the tribe fund, and we have an additional member as and when one of us can attend. So that's the committee that helps us process the work and ensures that we actually achieve the targets that we've set ourselves, and that's the committee that guides the work of the PIC. So beyond that, we then have a task force that processes the work of agriculture, and that task force is made up of ourselves as a company, a few members of our company, members from the Department of Rural and Land Reform, Department of Agriculture and Forestry, and Water and Sanitation, as well as ARC as a research element of that, and Land Bank. So that's the team that actually helps us at a technical level now to help process the work of agriculture, among others. So they're more of our partners as well. So beyond that, we then have other internal processes. We have a steering committee that were formed internally. So these are just layers, internal layers that we put in place so that we make sure that we have stop checks at every level before we actually get to the work of the implementation board committee. So we have a task force that's made up of all the project managers internally. So they all get together, they have put strategies in place, so the steering committee then oversees the work of those strategies internally. Then from there, we then have a global body. We have global representatives, head office representatives. We have the chief of legal, who oversees this work at a legal point, legal perspective now, who has been mandated by our global CEO to manage that. He is assisted by one of the lawyers who's in charge of all these kind of measures across the world. Then from internally, myself, Warren, and Dashna, who is our main coordinator for this project manager for this work, we then serve as one of the other stop gaps that actually filters through the work that happens. So that's basically generally an overview of this work and how we are structured in order to make sure that we achieve these targets set by this work. So this is a five-year program. We're spending across the 5 years. We're meant to disperse these funds within these 5 years. On the first year, we've already seen that we have actually overlapped a bit, because we're doing work and we will not stop it because there's rents and cents that are a bit extra on what we had planned. But the idea is to spend at least a billion rent across the 5 years of this period of the commitment. So the bucket of projects that we have taken on that are supposed to be funded through this million rent over 5 years is work on agriculture, which is a major component of the conditions, work on enterprise development, which is what Soleka does on entrepreneurship and all those programs and projects that runs there, and then we have something called societal South African societal benefits. This is more of a community development kind of fund set aside from this 1 billion as well to ensure that we better the lives of South African. So these conditions, you honourable chair, you know better. These conditions are really meant to facilitate the work that that was agreed upon at the time the measure happened, and the main aim really is to ensure that we improve the lives of South Africans as we go along in the next 5 years. So maybe I should just mention that the aim for us as a company is not to tick these boxes until 5 years, and when the 5-year tenure lapses, we then fold our arms and go elsewhere. So our plan, as you see it, when the team presents some of the things that we will do them beyond the 5-year period. So that's just by way of overview, Chair. Thank you very much. So I'll hand over to Warren to take us through the compliance plans.
Oh, sorry, Brian, before you come in. Will it possible for us to get the structure of this overview?
Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Working on what Doreen has explained to you, the principal role I have in SAB, and maybe I should give some context there, because some people don't know whether it's AB InBev or SAB. AB InBev was the company that obviously bought SAB Miller around the world, but in South Africa we still operate as the South African Breweries Pty Limited. That is our operating company that existed before the merger, the one that employs all of our people, holds all of our assets. We still operate exactly as that company. As we operated the day before, we still operate that legal entity today. So there's some confusion whether it's SAB, AB InBev. AB InBev is our holding company. They're the global parent, and we are a subsidiary. What they generally did is across the world, they let all the local companies keep their identities. So they didn't steal the SAB Tanzania or the SAB Uganda. They left them as their local entities, whatever they were called in those various countries. So just so we're proud of the SAB name and the logo in South Africa, and that's exactly how we continue operating today. And as I said, that's where all of our staff, etc., are employed. So that gives you a bit of context around. So although the conditions, and Mr. Chair, Honourable Chair, you refer to them as conditions, we tend to refer to them as public interest commitments, but they're actually conditions imposed on the merger, of which some of those are public interest commitments. But generally in SAB, we refer to them as public interest commitments, because that's probably the most important part. There are some other conditions within there that have really nothing to do with public interest, more to do with competition and making sure that we don't stifle competition. So that's where my role within Doreen's team is, basically to look at the governance of how we are complying with these conditions. And Mr. Chair, there's three principal obligations that were placed upon us other than the conditions themselves. The first one was obviously to create an implementation board, and Doreen's given you a brief overview. That's a board that consists of government members and our own employees, and it's a board where we bring our day-to-day activities, we get recommendations from the board, and the board oversees how we are implementing effectively. So that board, one of the challenges we had last year, it took time to get up and running, and we've given that feedback to the Competition Commission that maybe we should get more time to bed that process down before we start, but be that as it may, it was quite hard. On day October the 16th, we then started running on October the 17th, and so it was quite a tough first year. So that was our principal obligation, was to put in place the implementation board. The second one is, from a governance point of view, is every year in November, we're obliged to submit a formal written report, and that report goes to both the Competition Commission and to the Enterprise Development Department. We submitted our first report last year, and there's an obligation on our chief executive in America to sign that report. So that's the level to which that report is submitted. The scrutiny and the governance goes all the way to the top. He has to sign an affidavit that that report is true and correct. So that report was submitted. And then the third leg of the governance is that in April of every year, after we submitted our report in the November, we're obliged to then have that report put through an independent audit process. So that's another catch. Notwithstanding the implementation board, notwithstanding our own report, there's yet a third level where our activity and our delivery is put through an independent process. So, like I said, our first report was submitted in the November of last year, 2017. That report was submitted. We then in April submitted our independent auditor report, which ticked off effectively our report. And subsequent to that, we've had feedback from the Competition Commission that they were generally comfortable with what we had delivered in the year of 2017. So not just on the not just on the investments that you will probably see today, because that's where we actually spend all the money, but on every single aspect. For instance, we had to sell our shareholding in Distell, the other liquor company. That was done and that is processed. So that's a condition we've ticked and we don't have to report on that again. So, Mr. Chair, that gives you a flavor of the governance process that we have. I'm responsible for making sure that report is put together. That report is then submitted to our chief executive in America. It is then signed off and submitted. So that gives you a flavor of the governance and how seriously we take it. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Chair, we'll hand over to David because we think this work is important because it is the backbone of all the things that we do. But then maybe, Honourable Chair, what I would like to know from yourself, would you rather, after David is done, would you rather we let everybody else present and then we take questions afterwards, or we'll take questions after each presentation because of segmented presentation? Thank you very much.
Okay, so now we'll start to talk about the work. Instead of the protocol. I think it's important that you understand, you know, within our organization, procurement's role is to work with the business and help define and drive the strategies around what we buy and who we buy from. And I think what's telling about SAB and its commitment is that I'm here today. So being that I own the team that owns a lot of the decision-making within the process, we've made sure to embed these fundamental principles throughout our entire procurement organization within South Africa. So we take transformation seriously. We've got targets and KPIs around what we need to do and achieve as far as preferential procurement, as well as making sure that we bring the best people together in order to actually execute these things. So as Zoe and John walk you through agriculture, enterprise development, supplier development, Clarence will walk you through societal benefit. Just keep in mind that, quite frankly, we're proud of what we've done so far in the first 12 months. Because we don't look at this as an obligation. We look at this as an honor to do, and it's got to be a conscious priority, not just for us, but for all the companies here in South Africa that operate. So with that said, I'll turn it over to the team, and hopefully you'll be pleasantly surprised and happy. And I just want to reiterate one comment Doreen made, that this is not a five-year endeavor we're on. This is going to be on a forever endeavor, right? As far as we're concerned, we're proudly South African, and we'll continue to be.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm up next. As I've said, afternoon, everyone. The name is Zoleka Lisa. I'm part of David's team in procurement, looking after transformation, entrepreneurship, and sustainability. Before I get into the programs, I just wanted to explain a little bit about why sustainability is important to our organization. In March this year, globally, AB InBev announced its sustainability ambition, covering water, waste, agriculture, entrepreneurship, and renewable energy. As a company, we believe it's important to take matters that deal with the environment and socioeconomic conditions in many of our markets seriously. So we are prioritizing identifying the challenges and coming up with concrete plans to address them. we see that we're a company that's got the might, the power, and the funding to really make a difference in society. So from a PIC perspective, the fund is going to be a very important lever for us in South Africa to bring these sustainability initiatives to life. We have a team that's not here with us in Cape Town today who is so passionate about being invested in South Africa and bringing meaningful projects to life. We, in the last year, have focused on water, waste management, as well as renewable energy. From a water perspective, if you looked to the slide, I'd like to apologize for the error in the 80 million that's mentioned. It's 40 million that has been demarcated to go towards infrastructure projects where we have municipalities that are struggling with water infrastructure. We are partnering with these municipalities to help them ensure that we are addressing the leak reduction, the leakages happening in the metros, etc. I'd like to walk you through one case in Gauteng. We have partnered with the city of Tshwane, investing 3.5 million rands in the Groenkloof water station. The refurbishment that's taken there has made a really big impact in that particular municipality. They have been able to bring on board additional water capacity, but I think most importantly, the MMC that we have been working quite closely with, Daryl Moss, was most impressed that this small initiative has allowed that municipality to save tremendous amounts of money to in the region of 2.4 million rands per month in what it was paying rand water for bulk water purchases. The phase two of this initiative, we are wanting to go into households to tackle household leak repairs and as well as install water pressure management systems targeting the Harankua area. We also see this as an opportunity to create the much needed jobs in our country. We'll be upskilling plumbers and are committing just in this year to employ 10 individuals to help us drive this initiative. We've partnered likewise in the city of Cape Town. We're all aware that the drought was quite serious this year, sponsoring 6 million, working with that municipality to also tackle the water infrastructure. Again, the city is responding with positive results from the initiative. We have another initiative looking in the Western Cape as well, in our hop-growing region in George. There is a large abundance of alien vegetation. We've partnered with the WWF to assist us to remove this alien vegetation and release much-needed water into that ecosystem. The job creation has been quite tremendous, 120 jobs created. We are now in the second phase, looking to invest 3.5 million over the next 3 years, continuing to add jobs and, more importantly, to ensure that that area has some sustainable water supplies. Honourable Chair, this is just a flavour of some of the interventions. In terms of what the five-year horizon looks like, we are now looking to alternate municipalities, looking to Polokwane, Ethekwini, Nelson Mandela Bay, to implement similar projects and then starting to track these projects aggressively, ensuring that we are seeing the return on investment. And I think the key here is ensuring that we are securing water supplies in water-stressed communities. If you go to the next slide. In addition to water, waste is a key priority, and I'm quite excited when I see this. We are committing 25 million of the PIC funding to contribute to help waste co-ops and waste pickers in South Africa to formalize the job opportunity. We've embarked on a pilot project at Tembisa. You may ask why Tembisa. The team in its first sort of 6 months wanted something close to where we are all at. We wanted to have a solid pilot that we can try out. Tembisa has a really healthy group of co-ops and waste pickers. There's good school, a number of schools, taverns, etc. We are partnering with these co-ops to ensure that we are formalizing them, giving them the right PPE uniform, giving them the right trolleys, ensuring that they've got the right trucks and equipment to improve the operation. They will also get business development support from ourselves to ensure that they understand their trade and their craft a lot better. Through this initiative, we are hoping to improve the job opportunities that are currently there and create new ones, looking at about 61 job opportunities. The co-ops are fundamentally female managed, with all roughly 60-odd women involved in this co-op. We are working with the tavern and community in Tembisa to ensure that we're really bringing to light the importance of recycling, specifically in rural areas and townships, and allowing unemployed women in our country to get a means to a livelihood. The idea is to then expand this program, going to places like Mdansani in the Eastern Cape and other areas, potentially looking to go to Soweto later this year. So the idea is we don't want any waste to land up in our landfills. Let's look at unemployed people to really take part in this new circular economy. Waste is creating a completely new currency in South Africa. So we are quite excited, and we hope we come back in a year and we'll have some really positive stories on this initiative. And then thirdly, when it comes to renewable energy, the African continent has been blessed with a beautiful sun, and we want to really harness that power. In the last year, we piloted programs at Tembisa again, looking to power some of our tavern owners by equipping them with solar panels on their roofs to help them reduce the cost of electricity. As business owners, we know you need to take out costs and be able to reinvest it in your operation. But what I'm most excited is about the second phase of this program. Essentially, we would like to establish a black-owned solar energy company that will install these panels and maintain them. We want to scale the solar tavern programs from just 10 to 1,000 around the country, but we are also looking to install community microgrids. This will allow us to power areas in South Africa that don't have electricity, looking at schools, clinics, and households. It's a powerful way of bringing new technology to communities, lowering electricity costs, etc.
Honourable members, I'm sure we all know the issues that is faced from youth development. One of the key initiatives that we are doing is to address this key imperative. Here we've got a wonderful program that we've worked together with Department of Basic Education, where we are teaching grade 10 to grade 12 on how to use the basic material around them to bring something of value. As what Zoe has just mentioned now, is that, you know, the new currency in the future is around waste management. So here we've got a wonderful program. It's a three-year program that we're investing 10 million rands. The focus is in Northern Cape, it's in Northwest, and also as well, it's focusing in around the Limpopo area as well. Secondly, we also know the issues that the youth has when it comes to jobs. And here we've got a wonderful two scholarship programs. We've got a scholarship and also a learnership program where we are assisting the youth around how to get education bursaries available. So in total, we're investing 80 million rand in this, and our focus is sitting in Gauteng, the Western Cape, and the Free State. Part of these programs as well, we've got a learnership program purely focused on the disabled learners as well. How do we find, you know, the candidates? We are working through the local municipalities. We do advertise through their local newspapers, and also we work with a local employment agencies as well to identify the potential candidates. Also as well, we are looking at opportunities of how do we keep the youth active. I mean, this is a key program to divert the attention away from the youth in focusing in alcohol and drugs. And here we've invested in sports courts, put 10 million rand, and it's, again, it was well received from the communities. Again, we are working with the Department of Sport and Recreation and also as well the Sports Trust. We've also worked with the Department of Education to identify the right schools where we're going to put the sports courts. Already, I mean, we've got some great success in the schools that we've already put these sports courts on, where, you know, the teachers and the learners and also as well the parents are telling us that, you know, the youth is really diverting their attention towards these sport activities. Again, you know, how do we make sure as well that in the communities where investment hasn't been coming through, again, we are bringing investment. Here is a classic example of in the Eastern Cape, Kaska Mahuk, whereby here in our strategic partnership alliance program, here we are pulling in all other spheres of private sectors, working with business leadership programs as well, to say how do they also bring in their resources into a community that is at need. Here we're looking at opportunities of identifying real needs for this specific community, then investing 10 million rand to address those proper issues that the community is faced with. I'm sure, honourable members, you can see that we are doing our best to ensure that we are not working in isolation. We are working with local government to make sure that the investment that we put in is correct and right for those specific local communities. I'll hand over now to Zoe to take us through the more enterprise development.
Honourable Chair, when it comes to enterprise and supply development, we have allocated 200 million. This is a really important, I think, pillar for us in procurement, ensuring that we are driving impactful entrepreneurship programs. We are localizing our supply chain. We are diversifying. SAB's got a big supply chain. We need to ensure that we work with the big guy as well as the small guy. And also quite importantly that our interventions are creating the much needed jobs in our country. As David said earlier on, the procurement mandate is to really lead from the front in the business when it comes to transformation of the supply chain. We are proud to say that SAB, 95% of all the goods and services that go into our products are all locally sourced in South Africa. Where we do import, it's the odd occurrence here and there where my colleague John Rogers has drought issues and we have to get malt, for example, from other countries. But we've got very aggressive KPIs in ensuring that we really live up to the transformation codes and that local sourcing is at the core of what we do. In terms of how the 200 million is allocated, 25 million is going to entrepreneurship programs that are supporting youth-owned businesses as well as women-owned businesses to help them with the necessary skills to try and access supply chains like ourselves. We work quite aggressively with these companies to make sure that they indeed do get market access opportunities. The second part of it is another 25 million that's going to our business incubator, where we've got dedicated coaches, 20 people from our company, 20 highly skilled coaches and engineers are working with our black-owned SMEs to ensure that we indeed do drive the transformation and support SMEs impactfully. And then the third part of the investment, the largest 150 million, is going towards our SAB Thrive Fund, which is used to make strategic investments into black-owned entities, either transforming them or scaling black-owned companies. My colleague to my right, Boris, will expand on that shortly after I've completed my presentation. Honourable Chair, I'll just briefly give you an overview of what entrepreneurship looks like at SAB. We have five signature programs. The first two I'll speak to are enterprise development programs. The SAB Foundation has been around since 2010. It's an independent trust. This is our biggest program that helps us support entrepreneurs in rural areas, targeting youth-owned, women-owned. And what differentiates the SAB Foundation, it is the main program that helps and works with entrepreneurs and people who have disabilities. We have the SAB Kickstart program. It's our youth enterprise development program. It's one of the longest running programs in South Africa, being established in 1994. It helps youths aged between 18 and 35. It supports them in two ways, to help start up a business as well as scale businesses that are existing. What we've done with this program in recent times, we've tried to ensure that the interventions are closely aligned to market access. We have to make sure that the youth businesses that we're investing in ultimately do get business, not always within our supply chain, but we use our network, etc. With the PIC investment, Honorable Chair and members, we've been able to improve three and add new programs. SAB Lerumo is targeting women-owned entities. By women-owned, I'm looking at 51% women-owned and managed businesses. As a supply chain at SAB, for many years, we struggled to see an uplift in our black women-owned spend. So what we've done as procurement professionals, we're now targeting women-owned, black women-owned businesses to give them the necessary skills on how to approach a procurement organization, how do you read a contract, what does it take to pitch effectively, how to navigate a large corporate supply chain like ours, and the impact we're seeing right now today, we're looking at a 10% representation of women-owned businesses. So this is going to be an important program for us to run to ensure that we are, in fact, allowing an opportunity to diversify and allow opportunities for black women-owned businesses in our supply chain. The SAB Accelerator, as I've mentioned, has our coaches and technical engineers. The team is actively at work trying to help SMEs in our supply chain. If we want to divert more spend, we need to make sure that these SMEs are able to take on the spend and that within their businesses they are taking out any operational inefficiencies. And then lastly, we have the SAB Thrive Fund. In the last year, we've been able to create in the region of 200-odd, I think, permanent jobs, 170-odd contract jobs, investing millions of rands. And I'd like to add, not all the funding that goes into our entrepreneurship ecosystems is funded by the PIC investment. As a business, we've been doing entrepreneurship for many, many years, and it's something I think that we feel is in our DNA. I have the pleasure of working with many youth, and Kickstart has helped a number of young people in South Africa start a business, and I think it's what makes people feel passionate about SAB. This is just a little bit about SAB Lerumo. In our second year this year, I think what we're trying to do differently and what we've learned, we are expanding outside of Gauteng. There are 9 provinces in South Africa, and our intent is to get to them. We are a new team, so I'd like to add, sometimes we have to get it right close to home before we go elsewhere, so we've got a really solid blueprint. This year, we've expanded the Lerumo program to the Northwest. We have a really healthy, vibrant a bunch of ladies in mining, in PPE manufacturing, metals, chemicals, and it really shows you the entrepreneurship opportunity in South Africa is so, so ripe. Corporates must have the tenacity to go into those spaces, meet those entrepreneurs, and really ensure that the impact that they give them is long-standing. In Women's Month, our idea is to host a round table. So David has agreed to invite all these ladies over to say, get to meet our procurement organization, pitch your business to them, have an opportunity to really talk to procurement, get to know what we do, ask us questions. We are currently helping the ladies understanding their business model, etc. And our commitment is to ensure that we either open up our supply chain or look into our partner network. We've got a number of partners in the FMCG and many other sectors that we are referring these ladies too. Last year, the 23 participants, of the 23, 10 of them received business from ourselves, roughly spending, I think, just under 20 million with these businesses. And I think most importantly, what we do and we commit to is we use our marketing power. We've got a very strong marketing footprint, and we really put out their names, taking them to interviews, profiling them on their websites. And once SAB says to a business, if I can buy from this black woman-owned business, South Africa tends to respond quite positively. So these are some of the interventions we're trying to drive through SAB Lerumo. And then again, we are also exploring new territories. The township economy is a new space for our youth program, SAB Kickstart. We need to ensure that we have extensive programs, rural, peri-urban, but the township is a vibrant place. There are lots of young people trying to start up businesses. We have got a pilot at the moment in Mutlakeng, working quite closely with Sister Irene and Clarence. We had identified Mutlakeng as one of the areas as part of the harm reduction pilot, wanting to look at areas where we can reduce the negative impacts of alcohol. But in order for you to do that, you need to ensure you've got initiatives and alternatives for young people to explore. We've invested in a vibrant facility in Mutlakeng, whereby we're partnering with the Gauteng Enterprise Propeller as well as the Rand West Municipality. We've identified 12 youth-owned businesses in the area that will receive training from ourselves. They're going to have space and rent paid for the next 2 years. And then we're really going to drive to ensure that we are giving these township businesses the skills to run compliant and sustainable businesses, and also marketing their products. We are going there tomorrow as part of our Youth Month celebrations, running a business clinic, introducing them to the likes of Google, EFSA. We've partnered with NYDA, who will be in attendance. So we're really excited about this initiative. We are looking to then take this business in a box concept to other areas and other townships, really trying to ensure we get a better understanding of the township economy, creating jobs right in the township and not taking these young entrepreneurs away from the areas where they live. The next initiative we have is looking at how to get young people into agriculture. I know we've got a very interesting land debate going on in the country, and we've got a number of young people around the table, and they said we've got a prime piece of land on urban rooftops. we're taking over 10 urban farms in downtown Johannesburg, introducing young people to hydroponics technology. They're going to be owners of urban land. We are partnering these young green fingers with a number of markets where people are buying this agricultural produce. In terms of how we've gone about identifying them, we've worked quite closely with agricultural incubators. The Department of Small Business has been also quite involved. We're quite excited. I've never seen young people so excited to be on a roof selling vegetables, but it's quite important. The idea is that through this project, I'm creating pipeline for my colleague John to one day help these guys when they own the formal piece of land. They'll have the right skills to know what to do with that piece of land. So we're really excited. The job creation opportunity per farm, looking at 5 jobs potentially being created, and I really hope to come back in the next year and come back with some really powerful testimonials. And then, honourable members, to just give you an indication of how we go about identifying entrepreneurs who take part in our programs, just last year we embarked on a national roadshow. October, November, we spent far from our families, travelling our beautiful country, hosting a number of workshops. So in order to identify entrepreneurs, we need to go to where they are. We focused on 8 townships. We ran full-day pitch workshops. For us, a pitch is very important. It helps us identify the jockey, we say, a good entrepreneur that we can invest in, and it also helps us to hear what their big entrepreneurship dream is, so we get to know what they are. Whenever we go on these roadshows, we also have business clinics, so entrepreneurs can come to our team. Remember, say we have the coaches and the engineers. They can ask us questions that relate to their business. And then post the interventions, we also help them with support. We use our WhatsApp groups. The young people have said to us, WhatsApp is one of the most easiest communication tools, and we also have a helpline. But to ensure that once SAB leaves a training intervention, we're not leaving and pulling out, we're partnering with the likes of NYDA and CEDA, so we can also point entrepreneurs when we are not there where they can go to for additional support. In the past year, we supported 2,000 entrepreneurs with training. Some of these entrepreneurs are currently in the programs we're running this year. So we do try and get a good representation around the country. And then lastly, Honorable Chair, when it comes to localizing our supply chain, we are now in our first year of having these technical coaches and engineers in our business. We have roughly 20 to 25% of our spend being black owned, and their job is to increase this aggressively. We also give this team localization projects where we have any items that are being imported. We ask them to find entrepreneurs that they can build and develop so we can localize that spend. We spent the greater part of last year recruiting this talent, so we only managed to reach 30 suppliers in the second half. This year in the first quarter, we've managed to help 22 suppliers. And what we use as a measure is we need to ensure that we're spending, and we're also tracking what that supplier's portfolio looks like. Are they growing outside of our supply chain? Are they creating jobs? What is happening in that organization? I'd like to take you through a case study of a black industrialist that the SAB Accelerator has supported. Kivali is a adhesives and industrial chemical supplier to us. The adhesives is used to put the label on our packaging. They were one of the first companies to join our accelerator. They were expanding and building a new plant in Harrismith in the special economic zone. We allocated a team of engineers to really ensure that we helped them with the industrial processes, the engineering processes, the setup of the plant, but also to help them within our supply chain. If you take a look at the graph on the bottom right, we have almost tripled our business with Kivali. And what that has meant is that this company has been able to add additional jobs, and their revenue obviously has increased. Just last week, they proudly opened this facility with honorable members from the DTI, the IDC in attendance. And as a company, I'm personally proud to see the fruits of our work. The IDC are taking this company to China as a good example of what supply development means when you are developing black industrialists. As a company, we're looking to scale this operation, take it beyond the South African borders, and are looking for other opportunities within our Africa zone. Thank you.
Thanks, can you mind hearing me? So, thanks, Honourable Chair. I think I'd like to take you to the Thrive, SAB Thrive Fund. And Kivali Chemicals is actually a great introduction to why we feel the Thrive Fund is such an important part of our broader supply development strategy. We actually met with Kivali Chemicals about 18 months ago in relation to the Thrive Fund. As I said, they're an amazing company, they're an amazing bunch of entrepreneurs who knew exactly where they were going. And they had a very strong vision for where they were going to take the company and needed us as a business to support them through enhanced offtake and process engineering, etc. They didn't need equity at that time. So the Thrive Fund is a black private equity fund that has been created in terms of Statement 100. 3.10 of the BE codes. So it's an equity fund, and Kivali didn't need equity. And so as a business, we helped them with everything else they needed. They already had access to IDC funding. They already had equity in the business. And so they had the capital structure they required in order to grow the business, which they have done very successfully working with our accelerator and with our procurement team within AB InBev. But there are many companies that don't, unfortunately, have access to markets or access to the capital that Kivali did. And we've identified that as a gap in the market that the SAB Thrive Fund intends to fill. Right, so why do we exist? Simply, we're an enterprise and supply development fund, as I said, set up in line with the codes. The Thrive Fund is here to help transform the SAB supply chain. We all know that big companies like SAB, we spend in excess of 10 billion rand a year
on procurement. Unfortunately, only about 20% of that currently is with black-owned businesses. And that's not nearly enough, right? So it's an initiative to help transform our supply chain. That number needs to change, and it needs to change quickly in order to reflect the country we live in. And the other reason we exist is to help create black industrialists. You know, we all know, we all understand the importance of that within the economy. You know, the equity we provide helps transfer, either grow existing black businesses in our supply chain, or transfer equity from untransformed businesses to black industrialists who we introduce into our supply chain, and to create jobs. Everything we do across all of the sustainability drives we do within SAB is about helping to create jobs for the country. As I mentioned, what do? We provide funding for growth. And we provide access, we help provide access to the SAB procurement. A good example of where funding for growth is required, equity funding, we've invested in a business called Songo Africa. They're a business that supplies T-shirts, caps, lanyards, etc. for our marketing drives. They are competing, in essence, with Chinese imports. And their drive is to localize as far as possible that spend we have. In order to do that, they need to order from local businesses in order to get the best pricing. To compete with China, they need to place orders, pay up front, and often live through a very long working capital cycle. So they need to wait for those T-shirts, lanyards to be delivered. They need to deliver those to us. And once they're all delivered, they can only invoice, and then they only get paid. So it's a very long working capital cycle. And what we found was they actually needed patient capital in the business to help them compete on price in order to source locally within our supply chain. We provide post-investment support. So we have a team. We work with the Awetu Project, who are implementation partner for the fund. They provide post-investment support to the business managers, how to manage the business correctly, how to set strategy, how to build proper business models, how to run the governance behind the company. And as I mentioned, we create opportunity for black talent by introducing strong black talent into the businesses we invest in. And then just to touch on the desired outcomes, again, it's the creation of strategic black-owned suppliers within our supply chain. There's a big gap for that we've acknowledged and are trying to help fix. And it's about effectively developing and creating black entrepreneurs within our supply chain. So I'll just touch on a few things here. But there are various objectives that were included in the public interest commitments, the agreement that was signed with the EDD and government. We believe we hit on these 7 points. Obviously, we're promoting suppliers by bringing together ideas, investors, and expertise. That's what we do. We have engaged with hundreds of potential suppliers to come and work within the scheme. Some of whom pretend and some of whom don't, but we're constantly engaging with them to find out what the issues are within the environment and how we can help. I will touch on the job numbers, but we've created 94 jobs to date, which we're very proud of, within our supply chain, and I'll explain how we've done that. We're a procurement program aimed at the reduction of imported materials. I've already mentioned Songo Africa, where we're trying to reduce our reliance on Chinese imports within the marketing space. We also have invested in a company called Steam Generation Africa, who, on the back of the capital injection, has agreed to do local assembly of Cochrane UK boilers, big boilers that we use in our breweries and many other companies use in similar plants. And we are focused on localizing procurement. So a couple of examples of that, we've invested in a business called Voicefun, which does IT support for our mobile phones across Africa. So we have given them business throughout our network in Africa, and now actually supporting all of the mobile devices through a call center which is based in South Africa. High-tech processing is another industrial company we've invested in. We've awarded them a beer recovery program in Africa, again across multiple countries. That program will be run by South African engineers who will travel up into Africa to implement the program. And then finally, we also invest in a company called Product Genesis, and we're looking to see how we can export the frames that they make into Africa. We will be investing about 215 million rand, which will, of that, 150 million will be allocated towards the PRC spend. So we are roughly 75% of the 200 million total allocation to enterprise and supply development. Training and knowledge transfer, as I've touched on, we have post-investment support, which helps train our suppliers. We work very closely with the accelerator within procurement, with regards to process engineering, and general business advice. In addition, we insist that the incumbent management of the suppliers we invest in are locked in order to train the new management that is brought into the business. And that's a very, very important knowledge transfer that we insist on happening over time. Stimulating new and existing suppliers. Obviously, we are investing in existing suppliers. I've touched on some of those names. But we also have created one new supplier which sits in John Rogers' field in ag, a company called FarmSol, who's helping us with our agricultural development. And we're looking to invest in a spent grain processing company, which again will be a new business that will be black owned and will be in our value chain. And then the final point again, it's about creating new and converting existing industrialized suppliers to black ownership. So really creating black industrialists within our supply chain and being very deliberate about it. Okay, if I can just touch on some of the companies very quickly. I mean, you can see we've invested about 80 million to date in seven different businesses. These are the businesses. What I'd like to focus on this slide is the jobs created. I touched on this just now. We've created 94 jobs. That was up to the end of 2017. We've invested 80 million, as I mentioned. And right at the bottom, you can see the SAB spend growth. So this speaks to how much more business we've been able to give these businesses since they were introduced into the Thrive Fund. And this is very important. So obviously, as we bring them in, as we help them with growing their businesses, a very important piece of that puzzle is to ensure that procurement comes to the party and pushes more and more business and spend to these companies. So you can see that DDS has increased by 17%, Genesis is up by 14%, VoiceFind's up by 6%, Songo Africa, we've more than doubled the amount of business we've given Songo Africa, and the hog farm is performing very, very well, up 35%, and then the last two are very recent, and it's too soon to measure, and we'll report back on that next year. And then just to touch on that again, I mean, just some portfolio news, really. I mean, just to give you an idea of what the kind of support we give these businesses once they are within the Thrive program. So DDS and Liquid Logic, they service our draft taps in markets. So they install and remove draft taps, make sure that the draft taps are clean. We awarded them the national rollout of all of our Budweiser taps within the last 12 months. Product Genesis manufactures frames that we put pricing up in taverns and pricing on the walls of taverns, as well as other marketing materials. We've awarded them, they've created a fridge cladding for Budweiser, which we have just awarded them a big tender to the value of 6.5 million, which they're currently rolling out again in South Africa. This is the company we're targeting growing into Africa because of their excellent products and cost competitive nature. VoiceFine, I mentioned, has won the Africa tender to manage all of our mobile telephony across Africa. Songo Africa we've doubled our spend with Songo Africa, and they're about to hopefully become the premium brand below the line local agent. Negotiations are underway with procurement. Hop Farm is a great story. So we had a hop farmer in George who wanted to sell their hop farm. The Thrive Fund engaged with the sellers. They were a white couple, and they wanted to exit completely. We bought the farm from them. We gave 30% of that farm to someone called Beverly, who worked for SAB. She was our a researcher in the hop farm for us, so she worked for the old SAB hop farms. And the farm has done amazingly well. So the yields luckily have gone up, but we've also increased the price that we pay for the hops. We've changed the varieties of hops that we've allowed our farmers to grow. Unfortunately, after a tough, very tough first year, even in the droughts, we've seen Beverly's revenue increase 35% over the last year. And then SteamGen Africa, I mentioned this, they are localizing assembly of boilers, of Cochrane Boilers, who's one of the big global boiler manufacturers, and high-tech processing. We've awarded them this beer recovery project in Africa, which has resulted in them hiring South African-based engineers to go work in Africa. I hand over to John, but that's a quick summary of what we're trying to do within the Thrive Fund.
Okay, good afternoon. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, for your time. As mentioned, my name is John Rogers. I'm responsible for agricultural development for the Africa business. When we speak about agriculture development, it's important to mention that this is very core to our business, not just in South Africa, but around the world. There's very few products you can find on the shelf that is as naturally pure as beer. So the quality and the availability of our ingredients, our agricultural ingredients, are very important to us. So we have a team of scientists, agronomists working around the world, working very closely with farmers of all sizes and levels of maturity to drive productivity and efficiency improvements for those farmers to improve the stability and localization of our supply chain. So much of what we are focused within South Africa, behind the investment that I'll speak to at a high level today, is really leveraging the experience and expertise of AB InBev and Global Agricultural Development and really accelerating some of the foundational programs that were quite strong from SAB within the country. As mentioned, within ag development, 610 million rand as the investment over 5 years. If you look at the table at the top of the page, that's our five-year budget that we have allocated within the agricultural development space. 117 million rand spent last year, targeting around 130 million rand to be invested this year. We break our agricultural development activities into three key areas: emerging farmers, the investment behind the capacity building upliftment of emerging farmers, one of our primary conditions and commitments. Research and development, which we think is the backbone of any agricultural development program, ensuring that improved varieties, new technologies, best practices are being deployed and adopted by farmers to improve their productivity. And then agricultural technology, and this varies across mechanical technology as well as digital technology, but we think a really key enabler behind agricultural development to the farmer and to the sector within South Africa. So you can see over the 5 years, we're projecting to invest around 650 million rand. As Dorian mentioned, our investment goes well beyond the 1 billion rand as part of the conditions. We anticipate investing more than the 610 minimum commitment that we've made. Our four main conditions to the table at the bottom of the page, our four main conditions are shown. The first condition being the emerging farmers and the number of emerging farmers that we incorporate within our supply chain. It's not just buying from these farmers, but it's really developing and uplifting, improving the capability and capacity of those emerging farmers. So in 2017, we increased to 351 emerging farmers within our supply chain. You can see the breakdown between some of our key crops. We are large consumers of barley and maize, as well as hops. And so across the 350 farmers, the majority were in maize, and I'll speak on the next slide about what that means in terms of the level of engagement. But also we have a large cohort of barley farmers, and as Boris had mentioned, the investment in the hop farm in George to transform that farm. In 2018, we have a target of 600 emerging farmers, so we're working very actively behind achieving that target. The barley season is already in the process of planting, so the dryland area has already planted. Irrigation will conclude their planting by the end of July, to which we anticipate having 152 smallholder farmers, emerging farmers within our supply chain. You can see a large increase within maize farmers that are participating in crop 19, which will be planted in September of this year, September and October of this year, and harvested at this time next year. So we're on our way to the 920 commitment. You can see our projection is that we'll deliver upon that commitment by 2020, 1 year ahead of the target. In terms of the next condition, the commercial farmers are also a condition. This condition is in line really with our production expansion. That is another condition. So the second, the third condition here on the table, 475,000 tons of barley, converting and moving South Africa from a net importer to a net exporter of barley and malt. So previous to change control, barley needed to be imported to satisfy the demand of SAB. And our intention that is within a few years, that's no longer the case, that we're 100% local in terms of our barley requirements, and that we're exporting barley and malt across the continent. That will require the incorporation of more emerging farmers as well as more commercial farmers. And you can see in 2018, we're anticipating that we'll achieve that condition of 540 emerging farmer or commercial farmers in our supply chain. Right now, the barley, again, has been planted, the majority of which has been planted. We're anticipating that this year we'll have 405,000 tons of barley harvested in the country, which is a big increase. Certainly the drought in the Western Cape and our ability to work through hopefully a plentiful winter in terms of rainfall will allow us to achieve this. But this is the area that's planted, and we're working feverishly on the ground with the farmers to ensure that we're going to get as much volume off the land as possible. And then the last condition is around hops. So similar to barley, SAB prior to changing control was a net importer of hops, and we're working through investments, through extension, through research and development to expand hop production and really catalyze the market demand outside of South Africa for the unique South African hops. Last year, the drought also impacted the yields and the production potential of the hop farms in George, but you can see our path looking forward in terms of converting to a net exporter of hops. On the next slide, we'll give an overview of our emerging farmer programs and footprint. So you can see in the top right, across the country, we're involved in emerging grower development across the majority of provinces within South Africa. So we have a footprint across, as mentioned earlier, maize, barley, and hops. We are actively working to diversify our emerging farmers to ensure that they have a market for other crops that are part of their rotation. We believe from a good agricultural practice, it's critical that a farmer year on year is rotating their crops, and so facilitating that is one of our priorities. We, as Boris mentioned, we incorporated a new company called FarmSoul last year as part of the Thrive portfolio. Our aspiration for FarmSoul is not only to be a black-owned business, but the leading emerging grower development company in South Africa. And this is a social enterprise. We believe sustainability is very critical. So we're setting up this company, investing behind this company so that they can be profitable and sustainable behind the social mission of emerging grower development, well beyond 2021. And to service many other customers, not just SAB. So currently, SAB comprises the majority of their revenue and their sales. But in 2017, we did bring in additional customers, Golden Peanut for the sale of groundnuts, as an example. And we're engaging actively with retailers in the country around vegetable offtakes and contracts this year. And in terms of grower identification, we have a robust process to identify and to bring new emerging farmers into the program. We work very closely with local provincial government, both at the municipality level as well as the Department of Agricultural and Land Development. So that's a process that we've deployed to ensure that we're bringing in farmers that can be profitable and that can grow with us through the extension support that we provide. In terms of what that support looks like, we provide an offtake agreement, so we think that's fundamental in terms of making a market for the farmers to sell into. We provide access to interest-free financing for their input, so a production facility is extended to all of our growers. We have a team of agronomists that are providing technical support to the growers. Every day, the agronomists are in the field working with the farmer on how to best manage their crop. We're also rolling out, you'll see in the bottom right, a training program this year to ensure that beyond technical support from an extension standpoint, we have a robust training program that each of our farmers will go through. So we'll be piloting with 120 emerging growers this year. This is in partnership with Grain SA, but ensuring that farmers are not only getting the agronomic training that it takes to be a successful farmer, but also fundamental business training, maintenance on machines, mechanization training, a really robust, holistic training program to help build the capacity of our grower base. So as mentioned earlier, 600 emerging farmers are the target this year, of which the majority will come through the Farm Soil program. We're also partnering with Grain SA through their emerging program. They have a longstanding emerging farmer program that we think is interesting, that we think we can learn from, but also that we think we can contribute to. So we've established a partnership with them to work with 80 emerging growers this year so we can really exchange the best practices of both of our programs and hopefully strengthen one another's. Okay? On the next slide is just a snapshot from a maize view of what we see as our glide path and our growth projection going forward. So this is on the back of some strategic investments that we're looking to make within our broader supply chain, but ensuring that we have a glide path that not only delivers on our commitment, but goes well beyond in terms of the number of farmers included. So it's a busy table, but just some data there that you can look at in your leisure. But I think an important part of this table and the program itself is that, you know, the public interest investment is important and material. You know, right now we are using funds to cover the operational expenses of Farm Soil as a business so they can go and deliver upon its mission. But we also, as mentioned, provide the production facility, the interest-free facility, which is outside of the public interest commitments. So this is in addition to what we're investing behind agricultural development in terms of the 610 million rand. You can see the size of that facility and the growth that that facility will need to undertake as we bring more emerging farmers in. And it's really the open doors for partnerships. As Doreen mentioned, you know, we have the interdepartmental task team, Land Bank being an integral part of that task team, working closely with them on how we can partner for the provision of financial facilities to emerging growers to help accelerate emerging grower growth and capacity within our supply chain. On the right, some highlights of a grant program that we also facilitate. This has been a program that's been longstanding with SAB. It was previously called Women in Maize. We've changed that to Women in Agriculture, broadened that to Women in Agriculture this year, because maize is only one of many crops that we support. So it's a grant program that is facilitated through Farm Soil. Each year, we invest around $20 million in grant funding around basic infrastructure, irrigation equipment, roadways, soil treatment and preparation, infrastructure that's critical for a farmer to be successful, with a focus on women farmers and empowering the women farmers within our supply chain. On the next slide, research and development. So for us, as mentioned, R&D is a backbone of any agricultural development program. And so our dream is behind these investments for the research and development program that we're building to really be the leading research and development program in Africa with a focus on ensuring the profitability and growth of South African farmers and the competitiveness of the South African industry. Agriculture is a very global industry. Global commodity markets influence the local reality, and so it's important that we drive improvements in efficiency within the South African sector for South Africa to remain competitive for many years to come. As mentioned, there's a number of crops that are important to us. We're expanding the research and development focus behind these investments across those crops and in bringing in additional and new crops to the country. So you can see some pictures of those crops mentioned. Rice, cassava, and sorghum is in addition to some of those that we already have mentioned before. We're working very closely with the ARC on rice development in South Africa. We've launched Budweiser as a brand in South Africa. It's been produced as of March of this year in South Africa in our Roslyn Brewery. 30% of its recipe is rice, and currently there's no rice produced in the country. So working closely with the ARC on the opportunities to bring rice in and have it cultivated domestically. There's been research work that's done in the past that didn't move forward, and we're reinvigorating that and making investments to do so. In terms of our approach, you can see our footprint on the right, so it follows the footprint on the previous page around emerging farmers, so investing where our farmers are behind the crops that are mentioned. Our approach is threefold. We focus on variety development and genetic improvement, so ensuring that the genetics of barley or whatever crop that we're supporting are adapted and superior for the environment and conditions. Moving on then to crop processing, we have a focus within our R&D program around crop management. So what are the technologies and the practices that farmers are deploying to maximize those genetics and maximize the productivity and profitability of their crops? And then demonstration. So a model farm, you'll see that one of our larger investments in 2017 was in a model farm here in the Western Cape. So really a place to showcase these new technologies, not just for barley, but for the other rotational crops in the system. So a model farm where farmers can go and see the best techniques, the best practices, the best technologies for wheat, for canola, for oats, for barley in rotation Farmers, by their very nature, and with good reason, are risk adverse and slow adopters. And so it's important to see, feel, and understand for them to adopt. And so really that model farm, that demonstration component, is important for the acceleration of adopting these new technologies and research outcomes. So just to highlight in terms of 2018, you know, finalizing the research hub here in the Western Cape. So that'll be a facility that's been designed for both a lab and equipment space for partnership. So partnering and collaborating with various universities within South Africa, private and public sector researchers, having space for them to come and work, you know, alongside us shoulder to shoulder on advancing agricultural R&D in the country. Expanding the field trials, as mentioned, we're incorporating new crops underneath trials, so working closely with the ARC on that expansion, and finalizing our team, you know, hiring more researchers. We've hired a sorghum breeder, and a cassava breeder, a number of field officers to work in the field, but ensuring that we have a robust talent team and pipeline for carrying this R&D activity going forward. Okay, and then just briefly, my last slide, touching on agricultural technology. For us, you know, technology is really the key to accelerating the emerging grower, their capacity, ensuring that they're connected, understanding and seeing the technology and the information that's available to them for them to improve their production and mitigate their risks. One example of that is a partnership that we've had for 2 years as a global company with Agrible. Agrible is a U.S.-based startup that's developed a very innovative digital tool for farmers that leverages robust climate data, soil science, advanced algorithms for the purpose of crop prediction and for a grower to make more timely, more accurate decisions as they manage the various conditions and changes that they see over their growing period. So this is a platform that we rolled out in other countries. We brought it to South Africa in the tail end of last year. It supports various crops, so again, looking at the entire food system, rotational system of the farmer, and allowing them to, again, have access to information that currently wasn't readily available in this form in South Africa. So the focus of this year is continuing that pilot, you know, bringing maize into the pilot as well as barley, and ensuring that the technology is being adapted for both the commercial farmer as well as the emerging farmer. Okay, thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, that's our story. We'll hand over to you to ask us any questions that you may have. We'll take the questions, but if there's anything else beyond this work, we're happy to answer.
Okay, Mr. Shofar, no, thank you very much for the presentations. They're informative. I hope the members are going to ask many questions and will get responses as well. It's on us now. Yeah. Honourable Fudo.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I'm impressed, huh? Really impressed that, you know, private sector can do so well in terms of developing in the communities. Wow. Big help for you guys. But I'm going to ask questions. The question is, we talk about the challenges in our country. But every time when big companies are coming, they go to Harday, KCA. Yeah, they do that. It's here. I've been ticking the box, you know, as a presenter. It's here. And for me, it's to say, I'm just thinking loudly to say, sometimes it's good to start with the weakest. But most of the time we start with the one that can, you know, survive, not the weakest. And I'm asking myself why. Northern Cape is one of the problems that is struggling. And Northern Cape is one of the problems where they abuse alcohol. They drink like nobody's business, like it. They tell that you go to. No, they don't get into Northern Cape and Western Cape when it comes to alcohol. But when it comes to development, we are not going there. And I'm just a little bit worried, Chair, to say why is it not going there? But the programs are good. I'm looking at one of the slides, I'm not so sure slide man, but it's about the youth development program, which is very good. I'm just going to say, we use agencies, employment agencies or whatever, to get people with disability. But the same agencies, they come to us. I come from an NGO world. I'm still volunteering even now. They come to us and ask us this. When they give you list, you pay them. When we come in as NGO, she says there's no money. Our focus is that and that. But the same agencies are getting paid because they don't have a list. We've got as NGOs. We know who's who in the zoo. So I'm just challenging to say, as much as you work with NGOs, it will be better also to work with NGOs so that they can be able to survive. Instead of going to you and asking funding, what do you call it, the CSI? Yeah. When I go to SAB, SAB tells me, no. You know, we deal with education. We don't deal with disability, you know, disability. Those kind of things. But we are the one that gives the same agencies. I was looking at BITE and say, wow, BITE is also here. So we need to say, how do we develop those other people, NGOs, around these issues? Entrepreneurs. I can see there's women. I can see there's youth. Where is my family of disability? I will talk for my family because I'm disabled, you know. So I don't forget it. In terms of sports, I'm impressed. You know, a lot of the things that you're doing, I don't want to lie, it's very good. And you can even see that this is, I know these programs of yours, but I was never so clear how does it work. Because sometimes I deal with sports. As NGOs, we deal with everything. So you go and check it and you see, oh, yes, I normally sometimes see these names, but the reality is there. What I want to understand on the supplier development, SAB Thrive, in terms of you are contributing, but I think it's not only for that. I think it's for everybody. I can see that we've got black industrialists, to prosper or whatever you know, in terms of supplying them. But among these black industrialists, how many people with disability are part of it? And then sometimes we did, like in communities, my constituency is in reaching where I've seen that there's a possibility of having, what do you call this, those crops of yours, because it's next to the river. But it's so poor. It's not far away from Kimberley. I think it's 30 to 35 kilos from, but they are very poor. Now, hence I'm saying, why do we go to people that can survive? Don't we go to the weakest people? And then you'll find that education is not so high. And we come with these programs of ours, and our programs will be conducted in English. Whether you how to develop your company, whatever. There's nothing wrong with that. But how do we make it sure that the person on the ground understand what you're saying, because sometimes you'll find a person doing a very good thing. The only way is to say the person cannot write what they know, you know, on paper, including people with disability now. Those that have got intellectual disability, they know exactly what they're supposed to be doing, but they cannot not write it down. How do we make sure that those people become part of, because they are able to, because sometimes you, you know, supply chain, they say, go to our website. And for me to buy data sitting in a rural area is another thing. When am I going to reach your website if I cannot even afford simple data? So those are some of the things that even if you have to have more people, it cuts them down. And I'm really, you know, I don't have a lot of things to say. I'm just saying I'm complaining because my province is not here. but otherwise, wow, you know, well done, guys. My last question is around, I was looking at the last page and I noted it. where it's talking about, for an example, I want to understand, if we've got this area that has got water, it's next to the river and everything. Now we want to train, they've got nothing. What is it? Do we start them training? Do we start them identify the land? If they've got the land, what is it that the company is bringing? Are you going to do irrigations, or do you look for other people, excluding government? I know government is part of the thing, but I just want to understand, how do you fund? Because when we live here, you need to explain to communities to say, there are these opportunities. But you cannot just explain when they ask you a question, you don't even know how to say. And I'm like, Honorable Masimbe, now my chair, they must come to Northern Cape. Yeah. thank you so much, Honorable Member. Honorable Chair, can we just deal with this and then we continue?
No.
Do you want to take the whole? Oh, okay.
You're not welcome, Honorable Chair. We go to apology.
Thank you very much. It's quite informative information. But it's a lot for a one day. Mm-hmm. Or for an hour. Mine, I think, it's a question of agreeing that if there are good projects like these ones we're talking about, I think we need to try and extend yourselves. Because SAP, you can find it everywhere, SAP Brewery. Now, it means they are already a base that we can start operating from. Because each and every province, each and every area, even in my township where I come from, you find SAP. You know, so if that is the case, then it's important also to say, I'm happy that you start anywhere to me. I'm happy with that. But as long as something has been done. But my view is that I think criteria, what kind of a criteria that you used to identify your people that you need to help them, first and foremost. The other one, I think it's important that the committee to visit some of this, so that when we speak with whatever we've seen and we talk about it very well. Maybe you can also promote the, you know, the vibe and whatever. Yeah. But it will also be interesting to find out the extent to which they will give post-investment support to the emerging farmers. That's one thing that I like, because your focus is around research and development. Most people are saying less about that. But in that 285 million that will be spent on research and development for agriculture, which institution you are partnering with? So that's where I'm ending. Thank you very much.
No, thanks. Thank you very much. The first question that I would like to ask is related to auditors. Who are your external auditors? And then the issue of Zenzele scheme. Can you brief us about what is happening currently? Because there was a problem, particularly with the Competition Commission, where they were complaining about the dilution. On this 1 billion rands that we have invested for the emerging farmers, how much have been used and where about? Which provinces that have benefited so far? We know that you can't miss the whole money. Am I correct that there's a billion rand for emerging farmers?
610 for agriculture.
Oh,
okay. It supports both commercial as well as emerging.
Okay.
Oh, that's 610 then. I thought it was a billion.
It is for the entire
country. Oh, for the entire. Zoleka, there's a page the way you are talking about this Gauteng, Limpopo, KZN, Free State, and then you say Isilanga. And I wanted to check if it was an error. You wanted to say Eastern Cape? Oh, okay. It was Isilanga, it's just a town. Then on the drive, transform white-owned suppliers' ownership. Can you tell us how far have you gone with this process, this exercise, because we are very concerned. It's not moving the way you want it. If you can just give us a figure of some sort, that so far this is how far we've gone with this exercise. Yeah, the last one is related to the taverns. You made a commitment that we're going to do something for them. Fridges, cold rooms. We just want to know how far you've gone in that. And where are they in this tavern that have received this this thing? That's all. That's all for now.
Turnaround research. I can see they've got researchers, development, 3 in Western Cape. Nothing in my province and other provinces. Why don't we have researchers in these provinces? So that when the program comes, everybody can identify, because I'm looking 3, and then 1 in Free State, or is it Free State? Yeah. 1 in Gauteng, or 2 in Free State, 1 in Gauteng. No wonder they're doing so well.
Honorable members and chair, thanks for the questions. Good point, right? So I think the one thing that we tried to predict was, you know, what we're going to question is going to be, and we thought the biggest questions would be, how do we choose where we go with our various programs? And we recognize that the public interest commitment is for all of South Africa, not just Gauteng. You asked the question, why right now are you where you're at, right, with the programs you chose? You know, I want to go back to a principle that what we're doing isn't just a 5-year commitment. It's a long-term commitment. A lot of what we're doing, too, it's brand new. It's never been done before. And in order to do it, we've got to have people close to the projects to make sure those projects really, really work before we just spread it out to areas to which we can't get to and caretake in case there's a problem. So it's not that we won't commit to expanding programs. We will commit to expanding programs. But what we want to make sure we get across to you is that we're not going through a process right now of just not choosing certain areas. We're choosing the areas based on where we believe we'll have the most success, where we'll learn, we'll find the new partners, we'll teach ourselves, we'll teach the people in the program, so it can then explode across the country. So that's a general statement around a lot of the projects, whether they're agricultural, whether they're for ED or society. I think the society ones are quite clear. We can do a better balancing of those projects as soon as possible, because there are things around climatology, there are things around infrastructure that we do have to worry about when you think about the agro programs. So, point noted, we recognize and accept that criticism, it's a good one, And we will continue to expand the programs throughout the future. We're going to bounce around because there's a lot of things, and we'll try to have each team member cover off the points that you have brought up. One thing is, also you mentioned Thrive with Disability. There's no reason we don't exclude disability on purpose. We have not come across a disabled business so far. So we would love to include entrepreneurs. So the Thrive commitment is transforming traditional white-owned businesses, right? So we can go out and find disabled black entrepreneurs who want to facilitate and take over those businesses, certainly open to it. And what it will do is it will remind our teams to make an extra special effort and focus to see if we can find where these individuals are and how we can include them in the prospecting of taking over those businesses. Okay, so that's the commitment that we'll take forward. One important thing is Zoe talked about the road shows, and whether it's the road shows for entrepreneurship or the road shows for agriculture, it's all done in the local vernacular. Okay, so a guy like me is not going to show up and talk to the community about the programs. Okay, it's not going to happen. So we've got great people throughout all of South Africa in our company who are accustomed to the customs, the language, and you know the geographies. And so we make it a special point to make sure that we show up and we're relevant on how we communicate with the local communities. Boy, I think everyone, you ready for all your answers? All right. So, Clarence, you want to start, or Doreen, you want to start? Clarence, you got to run down? Okay. All right.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, let me start with a generic statement as well so that I add on to what David was saying here. So I think what's important for us is that as much as we are starting with the commitment, but then there's work that's been happening throughout. So one of Len's favorite terms is additionality. So in addition to the things that we've been doing all along, we brought in the PIC investment as an add-on to some of the things that we're doing, because we had been doing stuff before. We couldn't just drop it off because we now have PIC commitments. So we have a two-pronged approach to this. Some of the projects that we've been doing all along, we didn't quite feature them in this report, because we're specifically dealing with the PIC funding here. We just brought in one or two so that we display the context of those. But we are in most provinces with the rest of the programs that we've been doing all along, which we haven't stopped. And the second thing is that part of what the foundation, the SAP Foundation, has been deliberate on is to actually work with people with disabilities in most of their programs. So I commit to sending you some of the programs that they are involved in. They actually have very nice entrepreneurship programs going on within the SAP Foundation now, and they've actually found a niche into people with disabilities, not just on basic entrepreneurship, but in the social entrepreneurship space as well. So they have something, they have a program called Social Innovation. So there's people within communities finding solutions for their own communities. So they fund those people to do some of these things. I fund them in training, or they give them seed funding to do the work. So I commit to send you a list of those. But having said that, so Honorable Chair, we're here because we have been invited by yourselves to come and present to you. But we're also here as a company that's in South Africa that's committed, that is the first beverage company as a proudly South African company. We are the first beverage company to contribute towards the Proudly SA campaign. And that then displays that we're actually here to stay. We're not just here because we want to check the boxes on the PIC, but we're here to stay. So this is one of the opportunities that you really welcome, so that if there are areas that we have a blind spot on, then we can gain from your wisdom in making those better. So that's one of the things that I feel is important for us to mention. So we have programs actually that are dealing with fetal syndrome.
We have a program that we're doing in the Northern Cape, but we haven't brought it here because we didn't do it. Yes, we didn't do it through the PSC money. We have a program that we're doing with the Ministry of Social Development in Mpumalanga. We've spent a lot of money in those budgets, but we haven't brought them here in the work that you do. So I think beyond this interaction, Honorable Chair, we welcome. So when the members, when some of the members are in Gauteng, it would really be nice for you to pop in the offices, because then we can get as many people as possible to do a similar presentation to yourselves. Not just PowerPoint, but just for us to have a conversation about some of these things. So I'm basically saying we're here, we'll answer all the questions, but we're here to get guidance from yourselves as well, Honourable Chair, so that we really welcome. So some of the criticisms is things that people have been saying to us anyway, and we really are looking into them. So the footprint that John was talking about, the way we're spreading to other areas, is actually as a response to such criticism. But what's important, I think, is that the projects that we brought here are those that are predominantly PIC-based. So I'll hand over to Clarence.
Thank you, honourable members. Just to echo words from Mam Doreen, you know, just outside of it, just the PIC alone, last year we invested over 80 million rands on harm reduction projects. So the 80 million rand was split into, you know, practical provincial programs to address the need of those provinces. I'll take, for an example, in the Cape, we looked at programs that address the safety of the community members. We looked at issues that addresses underage drinking. We also looked at issues that addresses how to increase the visibility of police in the community. Then we went to KZN as well, where we also invested in KZN on harm reduction projects. There we looked at road safety. We looked at, you know, tavern upgrade, but tavern upgrade in an element of how do we improve the conditions and the safety of consumers in taverns, and how do we make sure that the females are also protected when they go into taverns. We looked at the basic stuff like lighting, like security cameras, things like alarm system that, you know, helps with the response of the local police. In fact, I mean, some of the numbers that they've shown us already, when we put in the alarm system, is that the police effectiveness have actually improved. I mean, the response time has dropped from 15 minutes down to 10 minutes because now there's much more gadgets that are available to respond to issues in the communities. We also went into other provinces as well, but 80 million rand was specifically on harm reduction. Mam D spoke about the SAB Foundation. Over 50 million rand was spent last year in the SAB Foundation outside of the PIC. There's also wonderful programs, hashtag no excuse program, the gender-based violence program. Again, it was well represented across all provinces as well. And again, we are trying to make sure that our company becomes much more responsible, and with the hope that, you know, the community will also, you know, change. And also, coming to the disability, Mam Doreen spoke about programs within the SAB Foundation. And as well, if you look at the learnership program as well, I mean, the 40 million rand is specifically on disabled. Again, how do we make sure that we create skills and you know, disabled people can compete as well within, you know, the job market as well. The Northern Cape, we've got the FAIRS program. We've been running for the last 5 years. Because one of the biggest, you know, issues that we picked up in the Northern Cape is the fetal alcohol syndrome. So there, for the last 5 years, we've been investing and we'll continue to invest because that's where we think that we can really make a difference into that local community. I've got a chart in front of me. You know, in terms of the PIC investment alone, against the 210 million that was spent last year, we were able to touch at least eight out of the nine provinces, okay, on our first year. So our hope is still that we're going to expand. We're going to ensure that we have the right investment in the right provinces that addresses the need of that specific province. We've worked very closely with government, you know, to lead us, to guide us, to make sure that whatever we do, we are aligned to, you know, the government priorities. We are also focusing and being led by the National Development Plan, which also becomes part of a framework as we decide in terms of the programs that we want to do. Again, that's also another thing that we're embedding as part of our culture as well. Last from my side, from the tavern investment, this year we are investing over 40 million rand in taverns. We are taking the learnings that we had in other provinces like KZN from the safety of the tavern environment. There, what we are doing, we are, one, improving the lighting, improving the toilet facility. You know, just a classic example from last year, there was one tavern owner who was using the old toilet facility, not flushing. And last year, we actually built them a proper toilet from scratch. In that community, this outlet owner now has got a toilet, and now that same effect is actually going downstream to the other local community as well. I mean, we are really trying to be authentic and be real about what we want to do for the local communities. And I think, you know, for the first time, I mean, coming from the old SAB to the new ways, I've never seen such a big investment that has been put in. And what seems to be nice is that it's real practical, aligned investment that addresses the real need of our local communities.
Okay, so a number of questions touch on agriculture. I'd like to start by saying that I love the Northern Cape. It's actually a very important province for us from a barley production perspective. So we, as a move towards the 475,000 tons, we need to position much more production and productive capacity under irrigation than in the past. And so, for example, in 2018 versus 2017, we've more than doubled the area under irrigation that we've contracted. And the majority of that expansion is in the Northern Cape. So we'll have around 70,000 tons of barley this year from irrigation, the majority of which will be from the Northern Cape. So it is a very important province for us from an agricultural perspective. I think one of your questions was around, you know, if there's land available, water available, you know, what's the process to follow? And I'm happy to, you know, send what that criteria and that process is. We have a structured process for identifying potential entrants into the farm soil program. As mentioned, we work very closely with the municipalities and the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development within the province. So we rely on their recommendations and entities or previously disadvantaged individuals that they bring forward, as well as our own farmer network and some of the recommendations that our farmers bring in. But absolutely interested, especially within that region, you know, given our aspiration to grow to 475,000 tons. You know, we have farmers that are in the Volwitz irrigation scheme. We support a number of emerging growers that are in the Taum irrigation scheme, which, you know, reaches into the Northwest. So that's a very relevant and important area for us. We certainly welcome any recommendations for expanding the program into that area. So I think another question was really around the criteria. So as mentioned, for us, emerging farmer is a previously disadvantaged individual or an entity that is 51% black-owned. So we work through direct referrals, farmer referrals, departmental referrals to understand who is interested in the program. There's a set of criteria in terms of documentation, you know, affidavits, tax and VAT registration documents, registration of the cooperative or the entity, you know, insurance that, you know, the documentation of whether there's a title or a lease or the ability for them to actively farm that land. So, you know, some of those aspects are more governance and compliance, but important. And then we also do an agricultural assessment. So one of our agronomists, you know, goes out, meets with the farmer or the group of farmers that will be the primary farmers for that area, understands the soil, understands the productive capacity for the crops that they're interested in growing. And then from that diligence process, you know, if all those conditions are met, we bring them into the program. And the reason that we're robust is we want to ensure that when a farmer is in, we want to keep them in the program for many years. And so I think another question you raised was really, what's that post-investment process and support look like? You know, we don't want a farmer to come in, not be successful, and leave. If agriculture takes many years. It's a slow process, no matter how hard you push it. So it's important for us to have a minimum of 3 years on any given field to ensure that the soil is being managed and upgraded effectively, that investments that we're making or the farmer's making are really building upon themselves, so that productivity and efficiency of that land and of the inputs being used are really being maximized. So once the farmer enters the program, as mentioned, we have the extension officers that are an important piece of the support that we provide and the training programs, and these have been informal in the past. You know, this year we'll pilot the formal program that I mentioned across those different modules, you know, 120 farmers participating in that program. So it's well beyond just the access to finance and the offtake, although those are critical parts. It's really about investing and growing with that farmer so that they can become self-sustaining and move from an emerging farmer, you know, to become a commercial farmer. I think there was a question around where and how we're going to spend and invest behind emerging growers. So just an example of our footprint today, out of the 350 emerging farmers that we supported in 2017, 138 of those farmers were in Northwest, 29 were in the Western Cape, 67 in Mpumalanga, 59 in KwaZulu-Natal, 32 in the Eastern Cape, and 25 in Gauteng. So we already have a relatively broad footprint, you know, in terms of year one in this expansion, you know, actively looking at opportunities in Limpopo. Corona is a brand that we brought into the South African market. The Corona should be served with a lime, a wedge of lime. And lime is a citrus, is a fruit that's very difficult to find and is expensive when you do in South Africa. So we're looking at making an investment into a commercial lime operation that would be a black-owned lime farm. Limpopo in the citrus belt is a really interesting area, you know, for that transformation. We've actually been engaging, you know, one of the potential you know, black industrialists that would run that farm is a disabled women's cooperative. So that's you know, part of our network and potentially you know, who we'd look to bring in for that farm. So Limpopo, we have a plan. You know, I think Northern Cape sounds like we have a plan. and then Free State as well. You know, is on the borders of Free State is also an interesting area for us, for both, you know, maize to the east and barley to the west. So really the investment behind emerging farmers would follow where those concentrations of farmers are. And because of the diversity of our supply chain, we can be in many provinces. And also, as mentioned, one of our aspirations behind FarmSoul, for it to be a social enterprise that's sustainable, is that we are one of many customers. You know, there's other food and beverage companies, other retailers that are looking for an effective emerging farmer development program, and we want them to invest with FarmSoul because it is the best. And so it's our purpose and mission to ensure that it's the best program in terms of really, really driving emerging grower development that's sustainable in the market. There's another question around research and development and which institutions...
Sorry to interrupt.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
How much has been spent so far?
So in emerging farmers, $35 million was invested in 2017. $68 million is the plan for this year to be invested. Okay. In terms of the institution partners within research and development, you're right. We do not have a partner right now in the Northern Cape. However, we do research. We actually have a research farm in the Volarts irrigation scheme. And so there is active research going on in the Northern Cape because of its importance from a barley production standpoint. But we don't have a third-party partner that we're working with right now or collaborating with right now in the Northern Cape. So those red dots represent the ARC. You know, that's an important partner for us. We are concluding an MOU to invest in the ARC behind five research projects, you know, touching on crop phenology, a number of different areas related to both the germplasm exchange and breeding, as well as some of the crop characteristics that we want to research with the ARC. We also have a number of relationships with universities. So far, we have three research agreements with universities in South Africa. We're looking to broaden that and expand more, but that includes the University of Stellenbosch, University of Free State, and University of Johannesburg currently. But again, we're actively engaging with other agricultural colleges and research universities for those partnerships. So we think it's very important to work in partnership. Research and development is very broad, very complex. There's investments that we're making ourselves and driving ourselves behind R&D, but really that collaboration, that partnership is going to be important in order to deliver upon that agenda. Okay, I believe that answers the question in agriculture. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, can I just add, so you asked who our auditors are. Our auditors are Ngobane and Company, the black-owned audit firm. So the chartered accountants and auditors. But on the NGOs, honorable member, on the NGOs, we can't sit here and deny the fact that we actually use agencies, because we do. So that's one thing we're really trying to reverse, because the private sector in its nature is agency reliant.
And that's a culture we're really trying to reverse a bit, because with some of those agencies we have existing contracts, some were long-term, so some of those that are not so long-term, we're trying to see how we can get out of them so that we can go directly, because one of the things that we're advocating for is the direct interactions with communities, and the NGOs are one such. But having said that, we work with a lot of agencies, actually. So like I said, we didn't bring most of the staff here. We work with a lot of agencies. Some of them are within associations. But I would really welcome an opportunity to sit with you again and just go through some of the ideas that you have, and then we can see how we can tap into that sector so that you can actually assist us accelerate our interventions through direct engagements with NGOs instead of agencies where we can get out of things.
And then, so I'm just conscious of the time, so I'll try and be quite quick. So I think I've got four questions to answer. Two of them are linked. I mean, the question around how we select the beneficiaries in the Thrive scheme. There are two benefits. One is the existing supplier that gets the funding to grow their business. And the other beneficiary is obviously the black principal that gets placed within the business. And so they're effectively two funnels we work with. To be honest, within our supply banks, we have sent emails and communications and reached out to every single small supplier. So it's a total active supplier within our supply chain. It's a total of 272 suppliers. As a fund, we only allow to invest in businesses that are a turnover of 50 million rand or less, and we've said that businesses above 5 million rand are catered for by other schemes within SAP. So that's how it goes. So we've offered it to everyone, and it's hard, right? So we've only invested in 7 businesses out of the 272. So there's a big funnel of businesses that don't want to engage, but that's the nature of the beast, so that's absolutely fine. And then when it comes to placing black principles, again, it's through the networks within internally, the businesses we invest in often have very, very good, strong black principles that they want to promote into senior management positions and get equity. So we help them fund into those positions. And then we go through normal recruitment channels. So we had hundreds of applications for one job first that we had. There's no shortage of unbelievably talented black individuals in this country. And so the magic is creating the opportunity and matching the right person to each opportunity. And I take your challenge around facing a disabled principal. And we're in message to the team, we said that one. So those are the two. The second one was, the third question was around Zendelet. So our commitment is to come back with a proposal to government and to the commission within 2 years, so that's by October. So we have been working very hard on how we see that playing out. We haven't finalized it yet, so I don't want to discuss too much about it, but just so that you're aware, we obviously, Zendelet 1, where there was a lot of engagement as part of the approval process, we have paid out the proceeds from the sale of our stake in Coca-Cola, CCBA. We've also settled our proceeds from the sale of Distell. We've given a guaranteed floor, so guaranteed payout has been given to all of the beneficiaries of Zendelet 1, and that payment will be made as part of the maturation of that scheme in 2020. And the new scheme will replace, for certainly for our employees, will replace the old scheme. And that's where something to end up. So our intention is to take our proposal to government through the implementation board, which is the right forum we believe for that, and then we will set up a session with the Competition Commission as well to save our proposal. So that's underway and it will be finalised by October. And the final question was around the transformation of white businesses within our supply chain. We have made good progress. I think we've moved from about 12% of our spend being with black-owned businesses to, at the last BE scorecard, 20%. So that's a good move, but it's not nearly enough. The challenge we face, candidly, is that as a very big business, we have very large suppliers that are not transformed and struggle to transform for different reasons. You know, that they themselves might be listed on stock exchanges. And when we talk about transformation, it's about purchasing from businesses that are at least 51% black. And so as a result of that, we have some very, very big plans that are confidential. That, you know, we're putting pressure on our suppliers. You know, we are going to take some big steps to have a shift change in the amount of spend we have with black suppliers. And you know, those we will bring to you at the right time. It's not, but nothing to do with our billion rand and our PRC investment. It's about, you know, transforming our supply chain, and we're taking it very, very seriously. And the Thrive Fund will play its part, but only play the part right in the bottom of our supply chain, the size of the business we can invest in. And we're aware of that, and so we're thinking a lot bigger and are looking to transform the bigger companies in our supply chain.
I think there was one last question around taverns and the coolers. What we've done inside the PIC commitment was we're installing the on-site solar. So we discovered one of the biggest expenses that tavern owners have is either electricity and or ice to keep the beer cold. So it's a moderate investment. We convert them to solar capacity. What it does is it allows them to have additional disposable income that they can invest in their business or in their personal life, whatever it may be. So we started with a pilot of 10. We intend to roll out to 1,000 within the next 12 months.
Sorry, Arnavichay. One of the things you asked right at the beginning, you asked about the challenges. And I think if you listen to our team today, the one challenge we took back to the Competition Commission is, as I said at the beginning, the day the merger happened in October, from the very next day, we were obliged to start delivering these programs. So you can imagine our company went through massive churn. We lost 350 people within the first 2 months of the merger. So teams changed. So you can imagine the logistics of trying to get this team, as you now see it, and all the teams below it, together to start delivering on these things. So when you say, how do we identify? We were chasing the clock very fast in the first year. And I think the ask of us is that measure us as we develop and as we get better at this over the next 2 to 3 years, we will have a much better understanding. But it's hard for us because we have to comply, and we have to comply in the first year. So it's very difficult to start with the weakest, perhaps. We have to manage as quickly as we can so that we can show the Competition Commission we've at least addressed their concerns. We raised this concern with the Competition Commission, and we said in future mergers, not with us, but in future mergers, maybe give the merging company 6 months to engage with their implementation board, maybe to identify their projects better and then start to measure them, so that you're going to be able to have better questions at year one that you're now asking us. But I think the point is, I think you can see our teams delivered in total this in 2017, they delivered 202 million the spend. You asked the value for 2017, it was 202 million, and the target was 200 million. So we ran close, but we achieved it. So I'm just trying to show you some of the logistic challenges of trying to put these teams together and how they've done, and I think the team's done a fantastic job in bedding down the process. We will only get better from here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, thanks. You talk of 350 employees that you lost there. Well, if you say you lost them, are you saying you retrenched them? Well, what happened to them?
No, Mr. Chair, Honourable Chair, the conditions say that we are not allowed to retrench anybody as a result of the merger, so that's the phrase. This was a process where people were given an opportunity. Did they want to leave the business or did they not? So the people who left voluntarily, and there was a contractual undertaking from SAB Miller to protect them if they chose to do so. So the majority of those people who left were more senior people, And we have a commitment in the conditions to maintain a number of 5,697 employees. So that's where we currently are, and we've maintained that number, and we're not allowed to retrench. We are allowed to retrench for operational reasons. For instance, if South Africa had a very bad economic period, but that has not happened, and so far we've not retrenched anyone. The people have left or resigned or moved on to other issues. Thank you.
I'd like to address the question with regards to what else are we doing for tavern owners. We view our tavern owners as enterprises as well. So just like all other entrepreneurs, they are also getting entrepreneurship support. We have a very robust retailer development program. In South Africa this year, we are targeting 200 to about 300 retailers who will receive business training skills, who will receive access to the tools and skills that they need to run really strong businesses. We're scaling this program just not only in the country but across other markets, helping identify really good retailers and ensuring that they've got the backing of SAB to improve their operation. And they also get an opportunity to get other rewards program from our business. If you're a performing business, you get to take part in other rewards program within SAB. So we do view retailers as part of our entrepreneurship ecosystem, if that helps.
No, thanks. Before you all look at, we wanted to know how many have you issued the fridges or whatever to these taverns, because it's one of your public interest from your negotiations.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, there might be a slight misunderstanding. The condition says that we have to allow the tavern owner to make his coolers that he has of ours available to competitors. So if a tavern, for instance, we have placed a fridge or two fridges with him, and we are the only fridges in that tavern, then the tavern owner has the right to then say, I will now let a competitor use some of the fridges. So we dealt with that right at the beginning in 2017. We sent out communiques to all the taverns saying, here's the right that you have. If a competitor asks to use our fridge, you are entitled, but it is the decision of the tavern owner. It's not our decision. We can't tell him not to. We can't tell him to. He makes that decision depending on how well his business is doing. And we do have a number, it's not a survey number, but roughly we have understood that 4,200 of our taverns have made use of exactly that clause, which allows them to use our fridges to stock other people's products. So that's an estimate we've had so far, if that answers your question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The chairperson has given me that responsibility to thank you for coming over. I think it's also important for us to indicate that we appreciate the fact that you have sent here a strong team of 8 professionals led by 3 powerful ladies. So we appreciate that very much, but some of us come from Gauteng, so we know that some of the projects that we are talking about we are aware of. We see your company as a partner of the state because of the many people that you employ directly and those that you employ indirectly by supporting them and so on. We hope that this partnership will continue. There are critical questions that were asked by my colleagues here, which set a basis, a foundation for further interaction in the future. And we really do appreciate what you are doing for our people. But there's always room for improvement. So we'll share ideas and so on. And hopefully that will take us further on in our endeavors to improve the conditions of our people. So as a team, we are very, very happy that you came over. All questions were asked here, and then you responded positively to all of them. So thank you very much, we'll keep in touch with each other so that we enrich one another in terms of what can be done, you know, to take the whole process forward. So thank you very much for coming. Thank you.
Chair, before you, Honourable Chair, before you close, can I just say two things? The first thing is that we'll engage through Peter to establish our availability to go to any of our projects. They don't necessarily have to be in Gauteng. So when you go out there to do your constituency work, you can just let us know, Peter, so that where we have projects within the vicinity, we can direct you to those. And the second thing, Chair, we had actually brought Fina as well. Fina is our regulatory affairs person because we had hoped that there would be 5 minutes for her to say a bit about the liquor bill, if that's okay. But if you don't feel you have the time, we can do it for another day.
No, I don't think we should say she can't. If there is that arrangement, I think she can come through and speak. Then we'll then conclude.
As Sir Doreen has indicated, I'm responsible for regulatory, mainly dealing with legislation. Currently, I'm dealing with five pieces of legislation, the liquor bill, the competition bill that talks to the issue around mergers and acquisition, the market inquiry, and the PIC, and also the issue around Traffic Road Department bill, and the issue around the Liquor Product Act. But mainly the four key areas that that we didn't agree at NEDLAC was the issue around the increase in LDA from 18 to 21, because the fact that Department of Social Development is trying to do away with the issue of underage drinking, we believe that increasing the LDA from 18 to 21 will have most young people will continue to drink between 18 and 24, but then we have programs in place that we're trying to address in terms of harm reduction. And the issue around advertising restrictions, we have our own code of communication there where we don't advertise during working hours where children might be watching TV. We do have watershed times where we advertise at about 7 o'clock p.m. in the evening, and then we believe that that is the right time. But government is trying to have the industry advertise at about 8 or 10 o'clock in the evening. So the issue also around the extended liability, because government is of the view that manufacturers and distributors of alcohol would be held liable if they sell alcohol, if they don't take responsibility of where the alcohol ends up to. But then as part of our sales and distribution, we only sell to licensed taverns. So the challenge is how do we then deal with illicit alcohol that is out there. So that is something that we didn't agree, and we need to find ways of mitigating. And then lastly is the issue around joint liability, LDA, advertising, the issue around BEE, because the Department of Trade and Industry is of the view that the minister will have to prescribe a certain level, or a level 4, where all companies have to comply with. But then we were saying to NEDLAC that at least give the industry an opportunity to agree with the Department of Trade and Industry, because they're looking at five main key issues, but the key one that they are trying to point is the issue around ownership. But then we're saying the level 4 in terms of compliance can be reached through enterprise development, which today we were able to demonstrate. The issue around skills development, which we have invested 40 million in terms of funding university students. The issue around management control, which we are in compliance, but then government is trying to stress on the issue around ownership, which is not fair to companies, because it is addressed at the merger and acquisition part. So those are the main four key areas that we worried about, and that is something that I can find time and come back and discuss at length. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am, for that input. Very important. We always say that progress is not an event but a process. So we've started this relationship. We'll continue to engage, and we believe that it is going to be a fruitful relationship. Unfortunately, it has got to stop.
Yes.
It's very enjoyable, but it has got to stop. Thank you very much once more. We'll keep in touch.
Thank you so much.